All right. Hello, everybody. It's Dr. Ray Heinisch. I'm joined here in the virtual studio with Blythe Thalberg. Hey, Blythe.
Hey, Ray. How's it going?
Awesome. How about with you?
Everything's great. I'm going to apologize in advance if you hear any frog noises coming from the back. The frogs are really loud in the pond behind my house.
Okay, no worries. I hear no frogs. That's okay.
Okay.
You know, I'm Puerto Rican. I'm used to it because we have a tiny little frog called the coqui on the island of Puerto Rico. And it's just all night long you hear millions of little coqui.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That's why. You know what? It's kind of a soothing noise, though.
It is.
Once you get used to it, so.
It is. Very soothing. All right. Well, in today's podcast episode, basically what we're going to be discussing, what we've titled the podcast, It's Not All About Carbs. Kind of give us the backstory. Like, why are we talking about that today?
Okay. Well, we did get an email from one of our listeners named Sam, and he inquired about an article that he read that was entitled The Taliban.
The Low Carb Taliban.
The Low Carb Taliban. Yes, thank you. And it was a rather interesting article, I thought. There was a lot of good points in there, and I thought that if you and I were to discuss this, we could bring out some golden nuggets that our users can find useful.
Right. And you know, the author's name is Martin Burkhan, and the blog is leangains.com. And so, you know, basically I think he's trying to really shake some people up by using the terminology, the low carb Taliban. And what he's basically describing is that within the community of the fat loss and fitness industry, there are the equivalent of religious zealots as it pertains to specific philosophies, right? And the low carb philosophy of living is one area where you can find people who are like, only do low carb. Low carb is the solution to your fat loss woes. And as long as you cut out all carbs out of your diet, you're going to live a long, healthy, lean, and fit life, right?
Which is a really, really like off the spectrum, tough way to go. Most people can't live a life happily like that and have, you know, a social life and eat foods that you enjoy by completely cutting out the carbohydrates. And I don't think it has to be that way.
Right. And sometimes people tell us or write us and suggest that we are a low carb podcast or that that's our philosophy. But the reality is our position is that fat loss requires much more than just controlling carbohydrates. But, you know, that being said, it is a fact that you can't lose fat if insulin is chronically elevated. And so that's our position is, you know, we got to talking about this just a few days back where, you know, if we were back when I was growing up in the 80s, you know, there was all of a sudden this brand new sport called the UFC. That's right. Mm-hmm. I was around when the UFC, the Ultimate Fighting Championship, was brand new, okay? And so what they did was they brought in a whole bunch of different martial arts stylists, like, you know, Taekwondo, Sumo, Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu. And they would come in and they would have this big tournament. So it was one style versus another style. And we were, like, glued to the television.
That was the coolest thing. When that came out, it was phenomenal.
It was really cool. And it was brutal. But the reality was this. Was after the first few UFC episodes, people started to realize that if you were too heavily weighted in one particular style, like let's say if you're a Taekwondo stylist, you're a puncher and a kicker.
Yes.
That if you only knew punching and kicking, as soon as you were taken down by somebody who was a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu stylist, you were done.
And well, in fact, because they master in the grappling and the floor techniques.
Right. And once you take down a puncher and a kicker to the floor, they're totally... You basically totally destroyed any potential for them to do you harm because they have no experience wrestling around on the ground. So eventually after the first few UFCs and a Brazilian jiu-jitsu stylist by the name of Royce Gracie won basically every round, every match, and he wasn't much to look at. You know, he didn't look to have very, you know, good muscle tone. He just seemed like a normal guy. Went in the ring, would take out some of these, you know, ripped practitioners of other styles.
Like the big, muscular, the really powerful-looking guys.
Right, right, exactly.
And he would just smother them.
Well, long story short, eventually people started to realize that you have to be more well-rounded than that. You can't just be a puncher or a kicker. You also have to learn how to wrestle around on the ground. And so now that's where this whole concept of mixed martial arts came from. It didn't actually start. The UFC didn't start as a mixed martial arts sport. It started as a style versus style sport. And then it quickly became the mixed martial arts sport because they realized that if you were going to succeed, you had to master all of the different areas of martial arts, from punching, kicking, to groundwork. And so we view ourselves as the mixed martial arts of fat loss.
Absolutely. I think anybody would agree that as long as you're well-rounded and you can come up with the best formula possible, being well-rounded, you can collect the most golden nuggets of anybody. And you've got the power of the knowledge of all of those things.
Right, you take the best from each philosophy. That's our golden nugget principle, right?
Absolutely.
So in this article, he goes through and he talks about how the low-carb Taliban, or he calls the low-carb fundamentalists, mm-hmm. how they have all of these misconceptions about the effectiveness of eating low-carb. And so let's go through some of the main points from his article, and we'll kind of give you our rebuttal as to whether or not we agree or disagree with his position. Sound good?
Okay. Yes. Great.
So the first one, point number one, was low-carb Taliban believe that you can get fat even if you aren't consuming excess calories. Mm-hmm. Okay? So that's what he is saying low-carbers believe. And that is not entirely accurate. Sure, there are some people who don't understand, you know, what low-carb does, who may be suggesting that as long as your insulin levels are low, that you can't store fat even if you eat tremendous amounts of calories. But most responsible low-carbers don't believe that, right?
Right. Well, getting fat doesn't mean that you're necessarily storing more fat. It could mean that you're burning more lean tissue or more muscle. And then it might just make you a smaller version of who you are, but you're still just as fat. So skinny fat.
Right. So, you know, you can change the composition of your body, even though your weight may remain the same. We see that all the time. That's where this whole concept of skinny fat comes from, right?
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And, you know, anorexics are a good example of that.
Yes.
They have among the highest body fat percentage-wise of anybody. And they're very, very thin, right?
Thin and small, but at the same time, frail and unhealthy.
And their body fat percentages are high. So, you know, what low-carbers believe, and I think this is the bigger point, is that eating a bunch of carbs causes you to eat more and store more. It's not that keeping your insulin levels at their very lowest means that you can't store fat. It just means that it's almost impossible to lose weight when you have high insulin levels and when your blood sugars are wildly going up and down, because that leads to more appetite and more cravings.
It's like a catch-22. It's that circle that never stops.
Right. Have you ever worked with a client who suffered with hypoglycemia?
My mom, actually.
And what are her symptoms?
She has cravings all the time. Mm-hmm. She always feels like she needs to eat food. Now, the foods she feels like eating are not the foods that she
wants to eat.
Yes, absolutely. So she does a good job by eating the protein first and having like a proper meal syntax. But it's funny because she's constantly craving the types of food that are leading her to that end result of craving that type of food.
Right. It's a vicious cycle.
It is a vicious cycle. And I think a lot of people, when they start cutting refined carbs out of their diet, they find that they crave that food less. So the proof is in the pudding right there. You know, people, I shouldn't use the word pudding, but, you know, you can prove it to yourself that by cutting those foods out for a few days, you go through like a refined sugar withdrawal, and then you find that you crave those foods less. So you kind of, you put a stop, you put a hindrance in that circle, in that vicious cycle.
Absolutely. So that's kind of the key point there. Mm-hmm. He's not entirely correct in the assumption that low carbers all believe, at least, that consuming excess calories won't lead to fat loss as long as your insulin levels are low. But I will point out that generally low calorie diets will also typically be much lower carb diets when you look at the total quantity that they're consuming, right?
Yes.
So if I take somebody who's generally eating 3,000 calories per day and we bring them down to 1,500 calories per day, mm-hmm. well, yeah, they're lowering total calories, but they're also lowering total carbs. So you get a dual benefit there.
There you go. Yep. And I think that's why people initially, when they start a program, lose rapidly at the beginning.
Right. And, you know, when we're talking about the principles of fat loss, one of the core principles that we're always discussing is it's really about the hormones. And what does that mean? Well, that means that it's more important that we learn to live a lifestyle that naturally takes care of itself. So, you know, we've talked about calorie counting in the past, and calorie counting can be an effective tool for people who have this issue with insulin and blood sugar swings, mm-hmm.
yes.
right? Because
yes.
It's more like you're living off of a pad of paper. You're kind of watching how many calories you're taking in, and you're mentally, you're cognitively forcing yourself not to eat more.
Right.
But the ultimate goal, and that can work for people, but the ultimate goal is to get to a point where you naturally eat less without having to keep tabs on every single calorie you consume.
Because that's something that you can continue and keep up forever. You can rely on your body's signals for hunger.
You're a master of calorie counting, Blythe, because I know you've done it a lot in the past. Do you calorie count all the time, or what's your approach?
No, but I am aware of the amount of calories I'm eating with pretty much every food. So it's not so much that I count them constantly, but I am aware of about what I'm getting. And of course, this may sound silly and I probably beat it like a dead horse, but I eat with meal syntax. I always reach for the vegetables first and then I reach for the proteins, and I can sort of calculate, you know, how many grams of protein I'm getting if I'm eating a fist size piece of chicken. And then I'll go with, oh, you know, I could probably afford half a cup of rice or something like that. So I am aware of what I'm eating. It's an awareness, not so much of a calorie counting, but yes, I know how many calories and grams of fat is in each egg that I eat, or, you know, I've done it for so long that those things, I guess they just add up in my head, but it's more in my subconscious.
Right. It's like you've calibrated your brain to what a healthy meal looks like. So
yes.
You no longer, and like you said, you've done it for so long. Like, the only reason you were able to do that was because you calibrated your brain by doing calorie counting. Mm-hmm. And I think that's one of the values of calorie counting is, number one, it can help somebody whose body is chemically out of balance, who mm-hmm. can't rely on the natural signals that work within the body and brain.
That's right.
But also, number two, it calibrates you so you start to realize when, you know, your meal is too calorie and carb and fat heavy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it makes it simple for me now, but it wasn't simple then. So, you know, getting into it and learning all those things took effort and time. But now, because, you know, like we've said, I've been doing it for so long, it just sort of comes to me. But I've also found that for people just starting out, writing your food down and logging your food, that is what starts that process.
And I agree wholeheartedly. It's a mm-hmm. core kind of a habit that you should get in the habit of doing.
Yes, and you don't have to log forever.
No, and you don't necessarily even have to count calories. Even just the act of logging the food, of writing down what you're consuming, or snapping a picture of it
mm-hmm.
before you eat it, can all start that process of calibrating the brain.
That's right. Those things are all helpful.
Right.
Okay.
And, you know, I will make one more point about that, and that is this. Self-deception covers its own tracks. So that's part of the benefit of keeping tabs on things is – people are blown away when they start to write down what they're eating and they start to see, wow. You know, I remember going through this with somebody I was seeing as a client here mm-hmm. was I would go through, and with each of her journal days, I would give her a grade, A through F.
Okay. Cool.
And, you know, the intention was to start really calibrating her brain to what is really an effective way to burn fat. So when she would think that she had an A meal and mm-hmm. it was rated a D, her brain was like, wait a minute, that doesn't make sense. Why is that a D? You know, I remember as a child when I would do like essay tests. I was horrible in school. When I do an essay test, I would hand that test in feeling like I was going to get an A+, and it would come back with a C or a D.
And
I would
be thinking,
what the heck just happened? Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's the same thing. If you have somebody there, somebody who's really good with nutrition, who can grade your diet, that's one, you know, one way to.
That is a good goal. That's a great golden nugget.
All right, let's go on to point number two.
Okay.
He says, low-carb fundamentalists believe that dietary fat is unimportant and you can't get fat eating unlimited quantities of fat as long as insulin isn't elevated. So, and I have heard this argument before, Blythe.
Mm-hmm. It's sort of Atkins style, isn't it?
Right, right. Okay. And you hear that in the Atkins, you read that in the Atkins book or in, at least mm-hmm. in older versions where, you know, they'll say you can't store dietary fat unless your insulin levels are elevated. And, you know, that's not entirely true, number one. But, well, yeah, go on.
It's hard to overeat in fats. It is hard to overeat in fats. I mean, I don't see, you know, maybe instead of having one handful of nuts, you have three or four. Yes, that's overdoing it with healthy fats for the day. It's hard to sit down and eat, you know, two big salmon fillets. They're not those hyper palatability foods that call your name for hours after. And then once you come down off that sugar crash, you want more of it. It plays a different role. And it's hard to overdo it in fats because you also get a more satiated feeling from those fats. So your brain tells you that's enough, or I've had enough, even if you've overdone it. But I'm getting at the point of it's hard to overdo fats continuously.
Right. And I think that's the position of the responsible low-carb movement, which suggests that when carbs are limited and protein and fat comprise the majority of your caloric intake, then you won't want to eat so much fat that you'll get fat.
That's right.
And that's kind of the point. So, and it goes back to the first point that we made, which was the fact that low-carbers don't believe that low insulin is doesn't mean that you can eat as much as you want and not store fat. What they believe is that when you keep your insulin levels in a healthy range, then you won't eat as much in general.
You
won't
have as many cravings.
Yeah, right. Exactly.
Okay.
All right. Point number three.
Low-carb fundamentalists believe that you can't store fat without insulin. The truth is, you can't store a lot of things without insulin, right?
Right. Like protein. You know, if you don't have enough insulin. And a good example of this is type 1 diabetes. Mm-hmm. One of the hallmark symptoms of somebody who's diagnosed with type 1 diabetes, which is the type of diabetes where your body doesn't produce insulin, one of the hallmark symptoms is weight loss. Mm-hmm. And that goes counter to what you see with type 2 diabetes, which one of the hallmark symptoms of type 2 diabetes, which is not insulin dependent. It means your body's producing more insulin than you need rather than not enough. One of the hallmark symptoms of that is fat storage, okay? So we've got two types of diabetes, Blythe. One type 1, means that you're not producing insulin. And because of that, the symptom is weight loss. So, but the
other side, not necessarily healthy weight loss.
No, of course not. Mm-hmm. But the, you know, the type 2 diabetes is the one who produces too much insulin. And because they produce too much insulin, their sensitivity to insulin drops. Mm-hmm. Those people store fat more easily.
Right.
So it's not that they believe that, you know, when we're talking about low carbers, it's not that they believe that you can't store fat without insulin. They just believe that you can't burn fat when insulin levels are elevated.
Right.
And that's
true.
Much easier to store
fat.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, you know, we know that when insulin levels are higher than what would be considered physiologic or normal, then you can't burn fat as easily, and you definitely store fat more easily than if your insulin levels were in the healthy range.
Right. And that's a key right there, in the healthy range.
Right.
Because you don't want to be without, and you don't want to be too much. You've got to find that healthy range, you know, to reside in.
And it's a misconception that the goal of low-carb eating is to lower insulin levels to the lowest level possible. We just don't – when we're eating low carb, what we're trying to do is get our insulin levels into the healthy range. Mm-hmm. For some, it may be 3 on a blood test. For others, it may be 5 on a blood test. But one thing that we can know for sure is that if your insulin levels are 10, you know, twice what would be considered a healthy insulin, then for sure you're going to be storing fat more easily.
Right. You're definitely out of that healthy range.
Right. How about the next one?
Okay. Point number 4, protein increases insulin. Now, This is true, but it's not even close to the spike you get when you consume a starchy meal or one of those hyper-palatable foods like a Cinnabon.
Right.
You know, the insulin spike that you get from protein is in the healthy range. The insulin spike you get from something like a Cinnabon or an ice cream is going to be in the non-healthy range, up higher, closer to the 10.
Right. Much higher than that when we're seeing a post-meal spike, especially when we consume, you know, lots of starches and lots of sugar. Mm-hmm. Look, you know, low carbers don't believe that insulin is the devil. They believe chronically elevated insulin is the devil, and huge spikes in insulin is the devil, and large increases in blood sugar is the devil.
Right.
So it's not that insulin's the devil. Insulin is important for a healthy, functioning body. But having chronically high insulin due to the consumption of larger quantities of starch and sugars is a big problem. So, you know, Blythe, you know, you have a lot of experience with bodybuilding and being a fitness athlete. Mm-hmm. Do you consume large quantities of protein when you're preparing for a show?
Absolutely. I usually bump up my protein intake by like a third of what I do when I'm just maintaining because I'm exercising more frequently. So I'm burning, you know, more calories throughout the day and I need more energy. So yes, I do bump my protein intake up.
Do you burn fat when you're preparing for a show?
Absolutely.
So, you know,
that's the goal.
That's the goal. Yeah. Burn fat and keep and maintain as much muscle as possible, right?
That's right. Mm-hmm. And that's people talk about building muscle and losing body fat at the same time and that it's impossible, but there's such thing as maintaining the muscle that you've got and using that muscle to burn the fat away. And that's the key there, is maintaining your muscle mass so you can burn that fat.
And that's kind of like the dual sides of the coin as it pertains to insulin. Insulin, one impact is that it does promote the storage of fat, but the other side of the coin is that it does promote the maintenance of muscle and the growth of muscle as well.
And that's why it's so important to make sure you're eating, you know, some healthy carbs and getting your insulin up a little bit and keeping it within the healthy range. You've got to.
And that's what you do when you're preparing for a show, right? Mm-hmm. It's not that you're not consuming any carbs.
No, that's not true at all. I've got to, otherwise I wouldn't have any energy. But I try to keep it on the natural side where it's vegetables. And I'm not a big one for grains and things like that, but I will eat some rice or sweet potato. I really, really like sweet potatoes, the things that I enjoy. And on occasion, I can get away with having something that's, you know, a little, maybe a scoop of ice cream or something, just to satiate that need for, I think it's more of a mental need for right. You know, eating something that everybody else is eating, you know, to kind of, that helps keep me on track. I find that a motivating factor. Now, not everybody does.
Right. Some people have that kind of like, the exaggerated response. And generally, that exaggerated response where if they eat a scoop of ice cream, they eat the whole gallon of ice cream.
Yes.
You know what I mean? You know those type of people?
Yes.
Some people have that type of negative effect. And I'm not entirely sure if it's just hormonal or if it's something genetic that causes them.
It might be something genetic. And, you know, if you know that you're that type of person, then steer clear of allowing yourself things like that. Go with something a little safer.
Yeah, and that just kind of speaks to your particular formula. Not everybody can, you know, have one scoop of ice cream and feel satiated and satisfied with that.
Right. You know, quite often when I'm dieting for a competition, which I'm contemplating doing. I'm just going to put that out there because it will hold me a little more accountable. There is a competition in Florida coming up in November that I might be doing. But when I cut out all of the refined things, and generally I don't eat a lot of them, but everything else starts to taste delicious. The fresh pineapple that you get, the apples, I mean, they just, the healthy fruits and vegetables that I thought were, you know, I'll have a piece of fruit, now taste delicious.
That's a good point. And you know, that happens because insulin has an elevated insulin or insulin resistance has a tendency to dull the taste buds. It dulls the message between the taste buds and the brain so that things that should taste sweet don't taste sweet unless you have what we consider a hyper palatable food. That's one reason why you get addicted to Cinnabons when you eat them on a regular basis, because your body has become adapted to the level of sweetness in those hyper palatable foods.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, sometimes it only takes a few days of cutting those things out to where you can recognize how sweet and delicious, you know, the natural things are, strawberries or blueberries or cherries.
Right. And a hyper palatable food, for those who don't know, is just a food that's been engineered to really cause fireworks in the brain, similar to what you get when you would do cocaine or some sort of illicit drug. Is when you eat a Cinnabon, for example, which has been built in a laboratory to cause the same areas of the brain that are activated when you use, you know, an illicit drug to explode with activity. Then what ends up happening is, you know, a strawberry, which normally might cause a little bit of an explosion in that area of the brain, doesn't cause any explosion anymore. So you're not satisfied by that.
And that vicious circle starts all over again. You get addicted to those type of foods and then you want it again. You crave it.
Absolutely. All right, let's go on to point number five.
Okay, number five. Low-carb fundamentalists believe that carbs and insulin are to blame when it's really the obesogenic environment.
Right. And so what he's basically saying is that it's about calories. Is that it's the fact that we're surrounded by calories that is what matters to to cause us to store more fat, right?
Yes. And the availability of the starches that raise the insulin and the other hormones, this hormonal shift leads to more cravings, thus more eating, thus more calories, and you're in that vicious circle again.
Right. Low carbers don't believe that they don't believe that insulin is to blame for everything.
No.
They believe that the biggest obesogenic factor within that obesogenic environment is the availability of starches that then raise the insulin and those hormones that you just discussed.
Well, if there were no Cinnabons out there, if there were no chicken and a biscuit crackers, if there were none of those, do you think we would have this problem?
No. I mean, let's have a hypothetical, Blythe. Mm-hmm. If we were to remove every single refined starch, every single, you know, anything that's not, you know, a whole food, if we were to remove bread, pasta, rice, anything that has any kind of purified sugar in it.
Mm-hmm.
Basically, all that was available in the environment was meat, eggs, nuts, fruits, and vegetables. Do you think we'd have a weight problem in our society?
Not at all.
Right. Absolutely not. And so, yeah, you know what? The obesogenic environment, we do live in an obesogenic environment that's characterized by too many starches, too much oils and fat in our diet, too much stress, not enough sleep. All those factors come into play. And that's why I say that it's not all about insulin. It's not all about starches, because you can get fat simply by not sleeping enough.
That's right.
You can get fat by being excessively stressed all the time.
But those things play a smaller role, I think, in weight issues than, you know, if we did live in the environment where there were none of those refined things available, those refined foods available, the lack of sleep, if you had to stay up because you were out on a late hunt, or, you know, we go back to the Paleolithic era, you know, people just weren't obese.
That's right.
The diseases were completely different. Diabetes probably didn't even exist.
Right.
You know, it's definitely a more balanced way to live. And if you think about that and you remember that as you're choosing these hyper palatable foods or reaching for boxes and cans at the grocery store, you know, it is true. And this is sort of off topic, but not really. If you shop the outside of the grocery store, the perimeter of the grocery store, you will find the foods that you really need. Now, I did that with little quotes with my fingers, you know, and all the extra foods that we don't really need to survive are in the center of the grocery store, the boxed foods, the bagged foods, you know, all of the processed things that are packaged. Just keep that in mind when you go to the grocery store.
Yeah, and it's a very easy point. And, you know, so I guess we call it the golden nugget here. The golden nugget, his primary point is that energy balance is the key to weight loss, which is actually kind of true. But the low carbers simply believe that you'll never be able to maintain a normal, healthy energy balance without cutting carbs to the point where hormones such as insulin aren't hijacking the compulsion engine of the brain and right. forcing us to eat a bunch of high-calorie foods. That's kind of what low-carbers believe. So we're not far off, I guess. I guess the Martin here, or Martin from Lean Gains, he's just focusing on the calories. We're focusing on the step before the calories, which is generally getting the hormones in balance. And one of the first steps in doing so is to control the amount of starches and sugars that we consume. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, like we say, it's not all about carbs, but without that piece, none of the other things are going to work.
Right. I love how you sum that up. I mean, that makes it very simple.
Good.
That was great. That was great. That's a great golden nugget. And for those of you who are listening to this, you can rewind and listen to it again. You know, you just summed it up to where it makes a lot of sense.
Originally, was it Sam who wrote the email?
Yes. Yeah. Uh-huh.
Originally, he was asking or felt that some of the points that he was making in this article went against what we were preaching or suggesting. But the reality is, not a lot of it went against, only his explanation as to why. You know, so a lot of what he was saying kind of still fits with a lot of what we promote and preach mm-hmm. through Cut the Fat podcast. It's just, I think the path to achieving those end goals are different. He yes. kind of focuses more on the calorie counting aspect of things. We focus more on trying to get the body and the brain to take care of the calorie counting for us.
That's right.
Yeah.
And that's a healthy way to go.
Right. So that's today's podcast. You know, if you guys haven't had an opportunity to visit cutthefatpodcast.com, go there and sign up for our free newsletter. I've been sending that out on the regular now and been getting a lot of really good feedback from that. It's really just tons and tons of tips that you get at least once a week. And so check that out and sign up there. Also, you can find us on Facebook. Blythe, give us the scoop on how to do that.
Sure. You can find us on Facebook at Cut the Fat Podcast. Just one long word, no spaces in between. Just search us and you can like the page. We've got people that put great questions on there. And I know I enjoy going on there answering. Ray will go on and answer. We've also got people that post before and after pictures. I love that. I love that people share their goals that they're reaching on our Facebook page. It's awesome. So become a part of the community there. I know that you know, we enjoy all of our listeners going on there and sharing their experiences with us. Also, I post up some recipes on the Cut the Fat page. I've got a pizza crust recipe that's going to be up on that page probably next week. Now, it's not made from any, let's say this, it fits in the paleo style diet. I'm going to keep it kind of a secret just to have people go and check.
It fits in the paleo, kind of fits the low carb kind of aspect of things. Mm-hmm. So.
And it's tasty. It's tasty. If I put it up there, I think it tastes good. So I'm hoping that you guys do too.
I ain't going to lie, Blythe. I'm having a little bit of difficulty doing it myself.
Really?
I'm afraid.
You're afraid?
I'm a little bit afraid, but
it's good.
I promise you, I'm going to try it.
You have to try it.
All right. I promise I will. Okay. Well, that's today's podcast, guys. We'll see you at the next Cut the Fat podcast. Any parting words, Blythe?
Have a great week. You totally took me off. So. Okay. It's okay. Any parting words, Blythe?
Parting words of wisdom? Anything that you want to tell people, go ahead and spurt it out. Whatever's on your mind.
All right, Fat Cutters. Have a great week. Make it a great week. And come back to check us out for the next podcast on Cut the Fat Podcast.
You got it. See you then.
Twist of what you know is true. You're in a cloudy hole, a shit don't touch you. And you feel a place to pop the pus is blue. And all the sticky things that keep me sad.